Hey, real quick, before we get started, Content Matters with a Z is our content marketing company that helps entrepreneurs tell their own stories to those who care. And here's the thing. We think every entrepreneur that is willing should have their own content platform. And we want to help make that happen, both by working directly with entrepreneurs and by sharing our own stories, exploring the craft of content marketing. Content Matters, one piece of content at a time. Learn more at kazcontent.com. Welcome to the podcast, Entrepreneur Perspectives, introspective podcast conversations helping build and protect your business one podcast at a time, a KazCM production. In this episode, I chat with Brian Clayton, co-founder of GreenPal. GreenPal is lawn mowing made easy. They connect you with the perfect lawn pro. But there is so much more to Brian than lawns. We talk purpose, a video game metaphor, working on yourself, selling a business, accountability, philosophy, environmental aspects of lawn care, and why appear on podcasts. So let's get into the dialogue, and we welcome Brian Clayton. Just in the last few days alone, I've been thinking about landscape lawn care. I just got poison ivy a few weeks ago. It sucks. And I didn't know what it was. And so I'm dealing with poison ivy. And I had been out there pulling weeds and doing different things. And we just moved, kind of like I mentioned to you before we started chatting. And I got my own equipment. And I was just like, you know, it's a smaller yard that we have than we used to have. So I was like, I want to mess with it. I can handle this. Like, this isn't a big yard. So I got that. I'm like, I saw someone in our neighborhood. I was walking the dogs in the morning with my wife. And I said, hey, do you guys have time to come cut our grass? So they came and cut our grass. And anyway, I'm in the market, right, for lawn care. And I feel like I've been in the market for lawn care for many years because I'll find someone good. And then sure enough, things will happen and they won't be good anymore. I don't know what takes place in it. Maybe that's business in general. Like when you form a relationship, it's that honeymoon phase. They want to take really good care of you. And then a couple years or 6 months or who knows. And it's like, this is not the same service that I've seen. And you've grown a business in lawn care. You did very well with it. You had an exit point. You've now created business and you create opportunities for many other lawn care service companies out there. Do you see the same thing in the industry? Like, wow, it might start and seem great at the beginning, and then there's this huge drop off.
Yeah, it's definitely a phenomenon with the industry, the case of the disappearing lawn guy or the flaky lawn guy. That's one reason why we exist. It's one reason why we're here. So yeah, we can jump into that. We can jump into how we solve those problems. That's a big part of what we do. So
that's it. I mean, I think from there, I just want to roll. When you talk about that, is there like an accountability aspect that GreenPal has with the lawn care companies to make sure that the service, absolutely, the quality.
Okay. That's what we do.
Okay.
We're in the business of layering on that accountability. In fact, that is the word. That's why we're valuable. It's the accountability layer that ensures that they're good, ensures that they show up on time, ensures that they keep showing up on time. They're measured and they know that. And so that doesn't exist in the wild west of hiring a lawn care service. So it's definitely what we do.
How is it? Is it based off of reviews? Is it the app? Or is it something that you're controlling behind the scenes to say, hey, we're not going to give this company top rating or whatever that might be on GreenPal because they're no-showing customers or the quality of their work has gone down?
It's both. It's both passive and active. So in terms of like the accountability exists because they know they're measured on how often they show up on time. They have a reliability rating. So they have to show up on time to keep that high. If that drops below a certain level, they start receiving less bids. And if they drop floor level before below that, they get removed from the platform. And so, but that's just one of three major ways we measure these folks on an ongoing basis to make sure that they're up to snuff, that they're performing at a consistent, reliable, predictable manner. Because if not, then we don't have a product for the homeowners. So we really kind of have to balance it between both sides. It's not all, you can over index on one side at the expense of the other. So it's taken us like damn near a decade to strike that balance to where vendors love to use it, they make a bunch of money, homeowners love it because they get reliable service. And it's taken a long time to strike that balance between the two.
Okay, that's the online marketplace that you all talk about, which is challenging. It's like, it's one thing to focus on one side of it. We're going to help this, the consumer, we're going to help the business. Now you're playing both sides of it. And like you said, damn near, it took us 10 years. And
that's right.
Because it's a lot of hard work.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, and we're just keeping going from here, but that's the interesting part of it. So like, let me understand this. So if I own a lawn care company, do I work on both sides of it? Meaning where I can have my own clientele, I have my own clients and I'll work with them. And I can also work through your online marketplace of GreenPal. Is that how typically they're doing it?
Yeah. So we have our best, I guess you could say, impact on lawn care services that are just getting started in the business. So they just get started. Maybe they're mowing one or two lawns and they want to do 100. And they don't know the first thing about marketing. They don't know the first thing about operating a business. Nobody's born to know these things. Nobody's born to know how to do all these things. And so it's our job to kind of fill in the gap between, I just got in the lawn mowing business. I want to make like six figures of take home pay. I want to do 100 or 200 lawns a week. How do I get there? And then, boy, do I have a product for you. Green Pallet does all that for those lawn care services. It gets them all the lawns they want, gets them paid on time, makes sure that everything's organized in one place. It's like an entire suite of tools for them in one place. So if you're just getting started in the lawn mowing business, it's great. They just grow their whole business on top of Green Pallet. We do probably 30% of our the contractors that use it as a way to fill in and use it as an ancillary method to drive incremental business. And for them, it works well too. It's just that where we really have the impact is like, hey, I had lost my job. I didn't have any way to make rent. I went out and bought a $200 push mower and I was in the lawn mowing business. And now I'm making more money cutting grass on top of Green Pallet than I ever did in my full-time gig. And that's really where we have the impact. It's the best small business in the world you can run and operate.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I was just talking to someone earlier today and somehow like you're talking about, you know, what's going on in the marketplace and there's a labor shortage, right? But there's a lot of people that are available to work, but they're not working. And they were saying, and we were saying how, imagine if you lost your business today, what would you do? Like if you couldn't do it and you had to restart over and maybe you didn't have certain access to things like you used to have, maybe a computer, who knows what that is, but it's like, you could, like you just said, you could go buy a push mower, you could get started and you could start mowing lawns. And I've had these conversations with so many people recently. It's like the gig economy. It's this marketplace. It's this gateway to entrepreneurship. I think you're giving people this opportunity to say, and it's here's the thing, it's really easy to start a business, but it's actually impossibly hard to start a business because it's so many difficult layers. And okay, now you're growing your business. And if you get past all the red tape and the paperwork that you got to do, now you actually have to grow the business. Well, how are you going to do that? And it sounds like that's what Green Pallet is doing. It's like, hey, let us be your gateway to this next step of building that business.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So in many ways, I equate business ownership and starting a business like levels of a video game. And you just got to get through one level at a time. And so the first thing might be, hey, I want to get started. I want to get my first 10 customers. How do I do that? And Green Pallet is great for that for the lawn mowing business. Or I'm doing 10, now I want to get to 100. Or I'm doing 100, I want to do 500. And so it's like, just focus on one level of the game at a time. Don't get overwhelmed by all the things that are downstream. Just focus all of your intensity on getting to the next level. And even to like zoom out even further, the lawn care business is a great kind of gateway drug to entrepreneurship in general. It's got low barriers to entry. You can jump in, have no cash, work your ass off for 5 years and have a business doing over $1 million a year and with some money in the bank. And so I do some coaching for entrepreneurs and business owners as a hobby. And that's one thing that I always tell them. Like they've always got this belief that, well, I don't have access to capital and I don't know how to start a business, therefore I'm out. I can't get into business. And so it's like, well, you know, you can start a business like a lawn mowing business or a home cleaning service or a general contracting business, whatever. Grind in that for 2 or 3 years, cut your teeth on owning a business, cut your teeth on entrepreneurship, get some experience because a lot of these fundamentals that go into running a lawn care business are the same fundamentals that go into most every business. Cut your teeth on that, then plow all that into the bigger idea. And over a 10, 20 year period of time, entrepreneurship can be the thing that causes you to make something of yourself.
Yeah, that's an opportunity for a lot of young people, right? You got some strong people out there and they have energy and they can show up every day and they can be reliable. You know, maybe they played sports when they were young and they have a commitment. And that's part of it, right? It's that commitment of showing up on time and doing these things. And you could maybe perhaps still go to school or not go to school, or who knows? It's the whole thing of like, what else is there? What else could you do? Because like, if you run a lawn care business and just manage 20 homes, right? Or 20 lawns. That's something, right? That's something to, like you said, to build off of. It's difficult because they see it more as a labor for many people, but they don't see the opportunity that exists. I mean, it's needed.
Absolutely. Business ownership can be the thing that causes you to make something of your life, causes you to make your life matter almost. It can be the thing to help you make something of yourself. At least for me, 20 years of being in business has done that. And so like approachable business, like what we're talking about is a great way to kind of get in the game. And like you said, is they view it as like labor, well, I'm a lawn guy or I'm a grass guy. It's not that. It's like, especially in the early days, you're going to be balancing three things starting a business, working in the business. So yeah, it's the labor, working on the business. I'm building a business and then working on yourself. And so you're going to be doing those three things and the business is going to cause you to do that. It's going to cause you to level up. It's going to cause you to grow as the business is growing. And you're constantly doing those three things. As time goes on, you're working less in the business and you're working more on it. But as you work like these metaphorical levels, that's kind of how it evolves. And if you're doing business correctly, every 2 or 3 years, you'll evolve as a totally new person, as a completely new person, humble, wiser, yeah. Smarter. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Wealthier.
Yeah, all those things.
Hopefully.
purpose is what I hear, right? I feel like you found this sense of purpose when you do it, because it's like you said, you can look at it and be like, what's the point? What am I doing? Why am I doing it? Who cares? But it's like, you could take a step back and be like, that's my lawn.
Oh, absolutely.
That's what I take care of. And you're like, have pride in your work. Like you hear these stories of like underneath the chair, right? Someone takes pride in, oh, here the chair looks great, but underneath it, it looks like trash and it's like awful. Like, why would you do that? Well, someone knows that's what it looks like, right? There's little things like the homeowner might not even know what's going on over here, but that's my lawn. I know what's there. So I'm going to make sure that that little brown patch or whatever it is that no one else knows about, I know about it and I'm going to take care of it. And then overall, just having overall pride, but going back to that word purpose, like this is deeper than just making money, cutting lawns and doing things like your self-development almost. And like, here, we can help myself. I can help entrepreneurship. I can help others. I can help the families that I'm working with have a better, right? Just overall experience.
That's absolutely right. It's not passion, because I've been in the lawn mowing business for 22 years. You know, I started a lawn mowing company, grew it to $10 million a year and 150 people over 15 years, sold that. And then started GreenPal, the Uber for lawn mowing. Now it's 10 years in, 10-year overnight success, several hundred thousand people using it, $20, $30 million a year in revenue. So 22 years in one industry, and I hate cutting grass. So it's like, follow your passion. You never work a day in your life. Right, I think it's just bad advice, because you're never going to be passionate about what the business is. Very rarely can you make money on your passion. But purpose, you can, the business can give you purpose. Can be the thing that causes you to have, why do I get out of bed in the morning? And if I didn't, why would it matter? And so that purpose is like, the business can be the answer to that. And that evolves and grows and almost like magnifies over time. So to your point, in the beginning, it's like, it's a purpose of, I am the best in my industry, in my market. I literally go end to end and outserve all of my customers and do a better job. And like, I take pride in that. And then as time goes on, maybe it's like, well, now, you know, it's like I have this business with two employees and their livelihood is dependent upon my ability to perform and to make the right choices and to grow. And like that weighs on you. And so that's maybe your purpose. As the time goes on, like now I have 10, 20, 30 employees. And if I really screw this up, I'm going to screw this up for 10 or 20 people. And like, that's huge. There's gravity there. And then there's also like, well, now my company has this reputation in my marketplace that my customers depend on me, and we have to do the correct things day in, day out, or else we're going to let them down. Or maybe you have some stakeholders and you don't want to let them down. And so as time goes on, the business can be the purpose in your life, and it can be the answer to the question, if it weren't for me, X, if it weren't for me, then what? If it weren't for me, what's the answer? And so if it weren't for me, there's employees that wouldn't have a paycheck. There's customers that wouldn't get service. There's people that their families depend on what I'm doing. And so your business can be the answer to that question. And that's one thing that I really love about my 22 years experience of it being in business for myself. That's been the purpose of my life.
Yeah. You hear a lot about people who are in business, and at the very beginning, they really like it. And then it scales and things happen. They have employees that are managing things. And then it gets frustrating, right? Then they go through this time where they almost like hate the business, but they can't stop because they're so knee deep in it. And if they can fix certain things about the business, right? If they can stop maybe doing the labor and they're working on it, not in it, right? Whatever those things might be, they can have a renewed purpose, right? A renewed interest in what it is that they're doing and where they're going with it. And that's obviously where GreenPal comes in and to help it. But why? And lawn care is a perfect example, right? Because it's super easy. And I saw this play out numerous times. And this is what was frustrating for me. I would do some research and I would find a lawn care company. They would come to our house and we'd have a good relationship and they would take care of things. Our lawn would look really good, right? So we're in a neighborhood at this point when we lived in this house, and people would drive by it, they would see it, our neighbors would see it. Inevitably, you would see it probably within a couple of months, that lawn company was now doing 3, 4, 10 houses in just that area if they'd never been there before, right? So I found this company, they hadn't been in the neighborhood before. So it's a huge opportunity for that lawn care company. Well, now that's excellent for the business. So they went from 1 to say 5. Then to 20, and then they're getting found in other places. So they're going to hit this point where all of a sudden, it's not the father and the son, in some example, doing the lawn. They had to go hire someone else out. Well then, oh, we didn't show up today because he got a DUI, or this thing happened, or sorry, we got the rain, the weather in certain parts of the country, certain times of the year. It's just, what can you do? You can't control the weather, but you do know that these things are going to take place. So how are you going to fill the backlog? So they hit this point in their business to say, now this is like really frustrating for them. And then it becomes frustrating for the consumer. And then for some consumers, if you engage the wrong one, well, next thing you know, you're getting bad reviews. Now your business is like going backwards, then you're losing business, you're having to raise rates, gas prices are going up, the things that you can't control are going out of control. That's a lot, right? And all of that, yeah. I just said, and I'm sure there's numerous other examples of all that.
We just scared off everybody listening to this to never start a business.
But that's the thing of like, it's all great, but it's the inevitable. Those things are going to happen. COVID, no one could have predicted that, right? That's going to shut things down. People didn't want anyone near their house, right? For months. And so it doesn't matter if we were talking about beforehand, whether someone's going inside or outside, like, I don't want to see anybody near my house, right? Anyway, there's things that are going to be out of your control, but that is the way through it, right? Right through that obstacle is how you handle it. It's just why in that business and a lot of other businesses, there's this roadblock and I see it. And then you see the quality, you see everything else. And I know I touched on this before, but like all of those things playing itself out, you've seen it. I mean, is that the reason why? Because it's not just cutting lawns anymore. It's like sports, right? When you play sports, you play for the, you love baseball, play for the game. And then all of a sudden you see these players and they go to the next level and it becomes a business. It's like, this is not the sport that I grew up loving to play. This is not the grass that I grew up loving to cut. This is something different and it's lost my interest in it. And now I'm too far out of bounds with it. Now I'm just...
Yeah, no, it's very real. And every business is that way, I believe. Like every business, you reach the point of like, it outgrows the founder's capabilities and it outgrows the founder's, I guess, passion, and they hit burnout. And it has certainly happened to me. And there's a couple of ways that I look at it. First, it's like a lot of the grind and slog of business comes down to expectations. And so you expect it to be bigger. You expect it to be more profitable. You expect it to be easier. You expected it to be X, Y, and Z, and it doesn't happen. And therefore you're burnt out. So that's particularly like in the early days, a lot of the slog and misery comes from expectations. So if you can manage your expectations, understand that, you know, I'm working a five-year plan. I want to be by X, Y, and Z in 5 years. I've laid out these goals and I'm knocking them down. That can help. That can help satisfy a lot of that. And then you reach that point where maybe you did hit everything in 5 years, but then you spend the next 3 years stuck in the same place in the next level of the video game, maybe. And you're stuck on that level and you can't beat it. And so a lot of that is you can diagnose it of just the difference between working on the business and in the business. You're stuck working in the business and you're not dedicating time to work on the business. And so listen, entrepreneurship, business ownership is a 6-7 day a week sport. A lot of times you got to make time to come in on a Sunday and just give yourself 2 or 3 hours of good, clean time where you're not just like managing the day-to-day like frantic activities of keeping the doors open, but you're really working on the business. And so that could be the best employee training program in your market to quickly get people up to speed. So now turnover doesn't plague you. You know, if somebody comes and goes in a month, it's okay because now you can get them trained up in a week because you spent 2 months building the best training program you can. And that's an example of working on the business. Or maybe it's your, you know, it's like, well, we lost this big contract or we're losing these customers. And now, you know, we got to go out and find more customers. Well, maybe you've spent another 6 months working on the best sales system that exists in your little local marketplace to where you don't have to be beholden to customers so much. And so that you know you can at will go out and find more. And so it's like taking this time to work on the business and not just saying that, like literally like coming in on the Saturday, coming in on the Sunday, picking one thing and figuring out how to systemize whatever aspects of it to where you no longer are plagued by that one thing. You do that over and over again over 2 or 3 years. That's how you get from $1 million to $5 million to $10 million in revenue. The other thing I'll say is this, it's like not every business is meant to be huge. And so here's what I've seen a lot of, particularly in the lawn mowing business. Lawn mowing business is hard to scale to 8 figures. I did it, but it took me 15 years. And I spent 5 or 6 years where I didn't go on a vacation. I reinvested every dime in the business and I worked 7 days a week. And it was really, really, really tough. But not every business has to be big. You can build a great small business that makes profit and then take that profit and invest it in durable sources of income. So I know several guys and gals in the lawn mowing business that work their ass off in the business, make like 100K, 200K, in some cases 300K, and they live on 50 and they invest all the rest of the money in real estate. Like they go out and buy these like crappy houses. There's one lady in Atlanta that does this and she owns like 7 homes. And like in the off season, when it's cold and there's not a whole lot of like grass to be mowed, her laborer, she takes and renovates these properties. So it's like this lady's well on her way to being a millionaire. And it all started in the lawn mowing business. So, and she's only got 2 or 3 employees. So she's running a little small business. She's taking all the profit and investing it in durable sources of income, like real estate. And wow, what a great, boring way to get rich. Lawn mowing and rental houses. I mean, it doesn't get more basic than that, but that's a way to go from zero to retired at 40. It doesn't take a rocket science to do it. It's just a lot of hard work.
In all of it, right? And I think that's huge to say that, because so much of like, and I've talked about this recently with someone, like so much of society says you have to get bigger, right? You have to have the big business.
Not necessarily.
Right, right. But that's what people get caught up in. You get caught up in that race. And then next thing you know, you're like, why am I doing this? I don't even want this. And I think there's like this thing that I was writing this down of like saying no, like even in that example of maybe you can't take on any more customers. Like maybe you have a scarcity mindset. Like maybe for the customers we take care of, there's a higher price point. But that means I'm not going to go add another 100 people. And I'm sorry, you're going to get less service from me because I can't possibly do this. Well, what if it went the other way to say, I'm going to raise your prices, but here's what you're going to get with it. And I promise, who knows? And that's like to the example of maybe your business is good at 100K revenue.
Yeah. And you read the book, Richest Man of Babylon, and do everything that book says. And like, just pay yourself first every month out of the profit. And by the way, I like, that's what that book is just all about, is like, just pay yourself first. So it's like a bill, you pay yourself. And I don't mean like you pay yourself and you go to the mall.
Right.
I mean, you pay yourself and you put it in a Vanguard index fund, or you buy like all the FANG stocks for the next 10 years and you get super rich, or you go and save up 50K to go buy another rental home. I mean, like, you don't have to build a business with 100 employees. I mean, I did, and I did well, but it almost killed me. And it's like, if you really want that, yeah. I mean, I kind of had like a chip on my shoulder. So it's like, I really wanted that, but it's not for everybody. There's multiple lanes and approaches to building wealth and being successful. It's like no single one is a silver bullet. You really have to figure out, it almost doesn't matter which way you go. You just have to go all in on that one way. Whereas a lot of people try to like spray and pray and kind of meander and don't like double down on a strategy, and they get nowhere, burnt out. And like you mentioned earlier, the business becomes this chain around their neck. And sadly, probably because they've taken on like equipment lease payments and debt and lines of credit and all this stuff. And now they have to go to the business every day just to service all the obligations. And that's a scary place to be. Let that scare you. You don't want to end up there, because it's really hard to dig your way out of that.
It is. Well, and it's because a lot of the stuff that you're talking about here while it's in the business is like working on yourself, right? You had said that before. Like, that's the third aspect of this is working on yourself and going through this. And you're even reflecting back when, first of all, you mentioned Richest Man in Babylon. I think that's hilarious, because I was actually just rereading that book recently, like last week.
Great book.
Yeah. But you're reflecting back on the time when you had your business and you did well, but you're also saying like it was nonstop. In 5-6 years, it's like, I didn't do anything but the business. And, you know, it's sometimes like, okay, well, yeah, but he had success and he exited out of the business and made a lot of money, all of those things. It's like, yeah, but that doesn't mean like you can't sit back there and reflect on it. And so I guess one question I would have is, when you were building the business, obviously, maybe you're just getting started out and you can tell me how this went. Was there a point in time to say, I want to build this, I want to scale it, and I want to make this a sellable business? Did you have that mindset?
Good question. Ideally, I would have, but I didn't. And so for me, it's like, it was 15 years of me and one push mower to, at the end, it was me and 150 people, 90 trucks going out every day, 8 figures in revenue. And so like, how do you get from that point to that point? And it was a lot of like, it was a lot of evolution. In the early days, very much a chip on my shoulder. I just wanted to like have the big, yeah, I just wanted like to have the biggest landscaping company in town for some reason. I don't know why, but that's just what motivated me. And so like, I did that. And then as time went on, like I mentioned earlier, that my purpose evolved around my people, the people that worked for the company or my family. And then as time went on, like I started noticing myself growing. I was forced to like become a decent manager, decent leader, decent strategist. And then as time went on, yet like I was working my way up and had some decent income. I was able to kind of like think bigger. Business can cause you to be able to think bigger. And that was a lot of fun. And then I hit a point of plateaued. And so, you know, I had one of the biggest companies in the state of Tennessee in my industry. And I plateaued to where it was like, well, I'm as comfortable, but I'm no longer getting this like personal development out of it. And so it was like, I thought, well, that's missing. And I'm no longer being like fulfilled by this thing. Maybe I should explore an exit, because it doesn't happen very often in the landscaping business. Maybe one time a year in the whole country. And for a period of time there, it happened never. Like during the financial crisis, it never happened. But I thought, well, maybe I can get this thing sold. And so from the moment I had that idea to the moment I was able to get the business sold was over 2 years. And so it was a lot of reverse engineering things and processes and systems. And aspects of the business that needed to be there to make it available to be acquired. So ideally, if you have a business doing like $1 million a year in revenue or more, and you have dreams of maybe selling it one day, you should work like a 5-year exit plan. You should proactively plan for that and proactively do the things to groom it to be sold. Whereas for me, I didn't. And so you might not think this, I know I didn't. The way you run a business that might be sold versus the way you run a business that you might hand down to your kids one day are completely different. You make decisions very differently. And there's a lot of short-sighted decision-making almost that occurs when you're building a business that you intend to sell. Because the business is going to be valued on a multiple of the EBITDA, what they call, and like the net earnings of it. And there's short-sighted decisions that you'll make to maximize and optimize for that number versus I'm going to own this business for 20 years. And so like it changes your decision-making on a daily basis. And so if I had known that, I'd done things a lot differently, but it's okay. It worked out. But ideally, I could have worked a proactive plan, but I didn't.
Yeah. So you get to that point and now you're going to sell the business and then it's done. The cash is in the bank account. You don't own that business anymore. What was your reaction? Like, what was your feeling when you saw that take place?
Yeah, it was very surprising, the emotions that I went through, because I spent 15 years running this company. The 100 some odd people that worked there were like family members of mine. I mean, like metaphorically speaking, like they felt like family. And it was very much my identity was wrapped up in what the company was. And because that's really to make it, I mean, people listening to this probably can empathize. Like your business is an extension of you. And it really requires that to make it in business. Like it has to be part of your soul. It has to be part of your DNA almost. And so when you separate yourself from that, it's almost like a mourning, a melancholy that you go through. It's like an identity crisis thing. I know I did. And it was really, really hard, unexpectedly so. It took like 2 or 3 months just to figure out what the hell I was doing. And the other thing too, is when you assist with the transition is a weird thing, because like you're no longer the man. All your people are looking to you for direction and leading, and you're no longer the man, but you're still kind of there because you're assisting the transition. So I liken it to like spending 20 years married to your soulmate, and then all of a sudden some other spouse or man comes into the home to live, and now you got to share the house with him. It's weird.
Yeah.
And like trying to tell him what she likes, but he doesn't listen.
Oh, man.
Super weird.
Yeah, super weird.
That sounds weird, but that's what exactly like selling your business feels like. Yeah. It's like, it's just exactly how it felt.
Yeah.
And so that lasted for like 3 months and I moved on. And then I realized a lot about myself going through that period was like, now this is missing. I'm missing the purpose. And, you know, I was able to retire and like not have to work anymore, which was nice, but I was missing the purpose of the business. And I thought, wow, I really just need to get back in the game. I don't love starting businesses from scratch. It actually sucks. But I needed to get back in the game and be a part of something that was growing and prospering. So the idea for GreenPal was one that I was kind of toiling with for a while. You know, I felt like it should just be easier to hire a lawn care service. And so I recruited 2 co-founders and we sought out to build the app that is like the Uber for lawn mowing. You just push a button and somebody shows up and cuts your grass. And it was like naivete as an asset. I didn't know how hard it was going to be. And I thought the first business was really hard. And I thought, man, I don't want to do that again. That was really, really difficult. I want to do something easy. And boy, I didn't know what I didn't know. Like the second business has been 10 times more difficult than the first one. But that's cool. Like that's how it should be. It should be levels of the game. And the next level should be harder than the one before that. And so here we are. I'm 10 years in on the second company. And I'm glad I did it. You know, I'm a completely different person than I was 10 years ago.
Yeah. It's so fascinating to me because like you can think of like a manual labor job and guys out there and they're doing it. And it's like, let's just go and knock it out and lay the bricks and whatever. And it's like, here you are talking about purpose and self and reflection and the emotions that you went through and having metaphors to who knows what. And I think that's super important. I mean, you just talk about mental health, like you can build a fortress around yourself thinking you got all figured out until one day it's like the fortress was never really there. And you know,
yeah, it's
a real problem, man. It's
strange. It's bizarre. Yeah.
It's important to think through.
The business almost doesn't matter what it does. It's like, it doesn't matter if you got a bakery or a hair salon or a construction company or a software product or a landscaping business. Like a lot of the fundamentals and principles that go into bringing it to life and managing and leading the people that depend on it are the same. And I think if you've been through this journey, I'm sure a lot of this stuff resonates. Like, yeah, I felt I went through that too, because we all go through it. And there's highs and lows too. Like, you know, 20 something years of business and getting through the Great Recession with my first company, there's highs and lows. And I kind of make sense of it is like, you look at it like a movie, like a story, and every good movie, the main character goes through highs and lows. And if he didn't, it'd be pretty boring. And so you kind of look at it in that aspect. There's an author named Donald Miller. He wrote a book called A Million Miles in a Thousand Years. And that's really what that book is about looking at your life in the context of a storyline and understanding that like without the highs and lows, without the challenges and obstacles, it'd be pretty boring. So I read that book and it kind of abstracted like to business life. It's like, really? Yeah, that's kind of like what business is. Business has lended me that storyline to my life. And so you want it to be challenging because that's what makes it interesting.
Yeah. I'm sure early on, the challenge was to find companies, lawn care companies, to join the marketplace because you need lawn care companies on one side of it, right? To hire. So was that like people that you knew in the industry and connections that you had to reach out and say, hey, will you join this marketplace, like one-on-one or one-to-one and hand-to-hand combat type of thing that you always hear about when starting those businesses?
Yeah, everything about it was hard. That was hard. The homeowner side was hard. It's like you got to get both on at the same time and spark those connections. And so the one thing we did was just focus. We just like focused everything we could on one thing at a time. And super humbling because like, here I was running this 8-figure company and sold it and retired. And now I'm starting again. Like I'm begging people to use this app that was shitty as hell for a $27 lawn mowing, like begging.
Yeah.
Begging guys to like use my crappy app to get a $30 grass cutting. Like it was really humbling. But yeah, it was a lot of hand-to-hand combat. We would cold call lawn care services off of Craigslist that were advertising on Craigslist. Only time you get them on the phone was on a Sunday afternoon. And so we would come into the office on Sundays and just cold call hundreds of these guys and just trying to like pitch them on the idea of using the app. And we would get like 1 out of 100. And that was good. And so we did that until we got like 50 or 60 guys in Nashville. And then the app was so horrible that like it was really like almost an act of benevolence for them to even use it. And the way we kind of got over that was I would offer them free coaching and mentoring on how to grow their lawn mowing business. Like, oh, so for 1 hour a month, I will meet with you and I will coach you on how to grow your lawn mowing business. And so that was kind of the honey to get them to at least be there to respond to the opportunities and interact with the app on the vendor side while we could just focus on the homeowner side. And so we did that for like the first 2 years, which enabled us to kind of almost like hack and not necessarily spoof, but like kind of just like focus on one side. And so vendors would use it because I was interacting with them and they couldn't believe it. Like in Nashville, Tennessee, in the lawn mowing business, I was and am a known commodity. If you cut grass in Nashville, you know who I am. And so they couldn't believe they were getting to talk to me. They were like, wow, this is awesome. You know? And so like, that was like one little thing we could do at that level of the game to get to the next level and enabled us to focus, spend 2 years on just the homeowner side of the experience, building out everything they needed, talking to users, getting their feedback, baking the feedback back into the product. And then we would come back to the vendor side and build out all the stuff they needed based on that feedback. And it's kind of that ping pong back and forth for 4 or 5 years was how we were able to get the flywheel going. Obviously, that wasn't a scalable strategy, but it was the thing that we needed to do at that stage of the game to get to the next level.
Yeah. Being there, having been there, having experience in that, like you see a lot of businesses start up, right? There might be competitors or other businesses out there that are trying to create this, but you're the one that's actually been through this before. And that's enticing to everyone in the marketplace to say, this is being run by somebody that gets it.
Yeah.
They know what this is like. They know all sides of it. And you see that in a lot of businesses, like that's where a lot of things are developed because they've had the experience. Nothing's worse. And I'm not saying it can't work this way, right? You can hire someone from outside the industry because they have a different perspective. So I'm not saying that that doesn't work either, but it is interesting to say, oh, we hired this person, but this person's never once sold this type of widget before, whatever product that they're selling. And they don't know what it's like, you just said, to make in that scenario, let's say, 100 phone calls, right? Or like going on in the lawn care business, what it's like to actually mow a lawn, whatever side that thing is on, until you've done it, you don't know what it's like. How could you?
It's tough.
Yeah.
It's tough. It can be helpful to solve your own problem when you're starting a new product from scratch. So, you know, one of the things that was hard about the first company, which is a big landscaping company, to the second company, which is an app, it was like I was inventing a brand new product. And so there's a big difference between two. And I didn't realize the disparity between the two. Like we're talking starting a business from scratch, that's hard. But inventing a new product that does not yet exist and changing the way people behave is even harder. And so that was one of the things I didn't understand how difficult that was going to be. So when you're doing that, when you're inventing a brand new product, it can help to solve your own problem. And so that's kind of what I was doing. I was solving my own problems that I experienced over a decade. And that kind of put me on first base. The only problem is we didn't know any of the technology side of it. I didn't know how to write software. My co-founders didn't either. And so that was a big part of like the ticket price was learning how to build software. We had to learn how to write code. We had to learn how to do these things as we were interacting with users. And that was really super challenging. But the one benefit we did have is at least we knew we were solving the right problem because it was kind of steeped in my like experiential wisdom, so to speak. It was like based in my experience. So that can be helpful. Doesn't always, you don't have to, like the guys that founded Uber never drove a cab. So you don't have to, but it can be helpful. And if not, a lot of times it can come to your detriment. Like several hundred million dollars of venture capital has been poured into Uber for X ideas, like the Uber for home cleaning. There's been a lot of Uber for home cleaning companies like go bust because nobody in the team ever cleaned a house. And they didn't understand, like it didn't matter how good the app was if the bathtub still had like mildew in it. It didn't matter like how slick the user interface was if the kitchen floor wasn't clean corner to corner. And so a lot of times you first kind of have to have like what the first principle of experience and understand what the hell is you're doing and then build from there. It's hard to skip over that.
Yeah. I got to get into a couple of things environmentally, and I'm sure you're running into this with organic, right? Organic products. And then now you're seeing this huge rise, like go to Home Depot or Lowe's and the battery powered lawnmowers and all these systems. And because so much gas is being used and who knows, but what has been your take or your high up in this industry and understanding and seeing the trends? I mean, I'm sure there's a lot more than what we would see on it, but what's your take on the environmental side of the business that the industry that you're in?
Yeah. It's like I've been in it for 22 years. And from an environmental standpoint, the way it operates today versus the way it operated in 1999 is pretty much the same. Everything's still gas powered. Everything is still, you know, I mean, I'm sure stuff's way more efficient. They've gotten the equipment more efficient in terms of how much fuel and carbon it puts out. But at a fundamental level, it's still very much the same. What's going to change, and this is going to happen in the next 10, 15 years, and we're already seeing it, is robotics combined with battery power is going to revolutionize our industry. In 10 years, 80% of the grass will be cut by robots. And it's kind of our place to be a part of that. When cars switch over from gas to electric and autonomous, like completely, like Uber will power that grid. And so that's kind of where we're skating towards is we're going to power the grid of homeowners getting their grass cut with electric powered robots. That's where it's going. But it's not there yet. 99% of it's still gas powered. Because there's just, the power's not there yet. And it's drafting, you know, a lot of the automobile technology. And so until there's like advances made in the battery lifetime and power, it's still going to stay status quo. But I think in a decade, we'll see it shift when robots become smarter, more autonomous, the battery life gets stronger, the price points come down. I think you'll see a lot of this labor get replaced with robots.
Yeah, it was interesting because I was messing around with it. Like I said before, I don't have a huge, like it's my layout's different in my house. And I was like, what the ego power, whatever that is, the battery powered one, I just checked it out. And it's fascinating what, right? It charges super fast. But like you said, it's to do it as a business. I don't know if I would be running around with that. I did see a company in town that actually uses only battery powered equipment when I was just like searching Google, right? And they came up and people swear by it, right? Because they have a belief that aligns with that company's belief. And of course, that's me like, oh, this is an easy match.
Yeah. You see those guys operating in those niches and they're smart to do that because it's a competitive business and consumers more and more do care about that stuff. Most care about price, but for the ones that aren't price sensitive and care about making those smart decisions, there's competitors that can crush it. The problem is, it's like getting that battery life to last 10 hours is hard. You're constantly having to cycle through batteries. So the technology is not there yet. But you do see guys that operate in that niche and they tend to make a better margin. So hopefully we'll continue to see that because you're right. In 1999, when I first started in the business, it wasn't even in the conversation. Like it wasn't even, now it's an option. So that's good. That's going in the right direction.
That's something. And organic, right? Lawn applications and doing all those types of things. And you see the weed spraying going on. Obviously Roundup is super controversial, but you can't escape it. It's everywhere. And you got to kill poison ivy sometimes. You got to kill these weeds. They keep coming back.
Right.
Like, why do you do it?
Right.
And there's companies, right? Same thing. There's companies, organic companies that treat your lawn. And then there's companies that here's the products that we use and it's not organic. And, you know, there's pets and children and people and it's the environment. It's all those things. Is that, I mean, obviously that's been around longer than like the battery side of things, but is it the same type of philosophy to say, hey, if your niche is in organic lawn care service, well, that's a great niche to be in because there's people that believe in that too.
Yeah, I think on the chemical side and like keeping the grass green and free of weeds, unfortunately, you see these guys, they're still running around with trucks with 1,000 gallons of chemicals on them and just hosing down the suburbs. And again, that's still 98% the same today as it was 20 years ago. The same chemicals kill the same weeds and probably cause the same harm. And it hasn't changed much in 20 years, sadly, because to me, that's even more harmful than the environmental standpoint of it. Because we're talking some really, really dangerous chemicals here. Like, you have to have proper licenses to be able to do this stuff. But still, it can't be like super safe for the applicator. It can't be super safe for your kid playing on afterwards. So I think as like a consumer, you have to make this decision. And most consumers are going to go with the cheapest way currently and still, and that still holds up over the last 20 years because the organic way is more money. But you go to the grocery store, you're starting to see a shift in the way people buy groceries. You know, they're spending 30% more for the organic stuff. So maybe their lawn care decisions will follow that trend. I hope so. But it's still not quite there in terms of organics. You're not going to have as green a yard. You're going to have more weeds than you did previously. So it's more expensive and less effective. But I think it's just going to have to like come with a shift in consumer buying behavior and demanding it for the market to fill it. Maybe it might come at legislation. I know of some jurisdictions that don't even allow this stuff, but it's still very much the same. Unfortunately, I wish it would change because that stuff is harmful.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, like you said, like you could be the one spraying it or you're the one on the lawn all the constantly. And it's like, you got to think about those things. And it's like, you don't know what's happening in the moment, right? But over time, I mean, sure, constant contact with that, it can't be good.
They've linked Roundup to some diseases. And me personally, I've probably sprayed thousands and thousands and thousands of gallons of Roundup. So I hope that it's not true, but I wouldn't anymore.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that.
You're real honest about it. You also see the pivots, right? Like in the pivots in the business and your mindset and your ability to change and say, listen, I'm not going to go out of business just because the robots took over and they're now cutting grass. We can be a part of that process. And what's cool is you're out here talking about these things. It's just like, hey, that's what do we want to go over? And I think that in and of itself, obviously you have an app, right? That just getting started, even going back to your other businesses, word of mouth and getting out there and having customers talk about it. Well, now you can appear on a podcast. And I guess the question I would have for you is like, why are you appearing on podcasts? Why are you out here creating content?
Yeah. So for me, 99% of it, I do one interview a day. I've probably been on 300 podcasts. For me, 99% of it is like a philosophy in life. I think you're then a point of contraction or expansion. And you're either in one point or the other. You're never in the middle. So you're either contracting or you're expanding. You're either coping or you're thriving. And so for me, like interviews, sharing my philosophies, sharing my beliefs, sharing my strategies, it keeps me closer to a point of expansion and less so of contraction. And so I get more out of my appearances than anybody. And then maybe 1% of it is, you know, just get the word out about Green Pal. Maybe you'll hear about it that didn't know about it. And we do see some uptick in signups when I appear on shows. So that's good. And it's just good PR for the business. But I enjoy it more than anything. And I get more out of it than anybody.
Yeah. I see that a lot. I see that with a lot of founders that the content, you know, at some point, maybe it was like, oh, we have to get more users or we have to do this or hire better people or whatever that might be. And it's like, the thing that I've noticed on this path to better content, as I call it, is the enjoyment, or maybe it's not even enjoyment because it can be difficult, right? To think through these things and to reflect back on this thing that happened in your life and where you were and where you are now. But to go through that and how important it is for the founder to have those moments and just to have the dialogue to talk through it all, and what better place to do it because there's no phones, the mic's on. So you kind of have to be ready to go and talk through it all. So
you got to stay on your toes too.
Absolutely.
You got to keep reading books. You got to keep listening to podcasts. You got to keep, you know, I think to be a successful entrepreneur, your living room is going to have to become a classroom. Your car is going to have to become a mobile classroom. Like there simply isn't enough hours in the week to consume the types of content you need to be consuming. So maybe there's a conference for your industry that goes on once a year that you didn't go to because it was too expensive or you couldn't go. But guess what? 9 times out of 10, that conference is on YouTube a year later. They always release them. And so you can watch that conference. You can watch every keynote that that person has given. You can watch every fireside chat. You can watch every interview. And like, wow, I mean, that's awesome. You didn't even have to go there and you got all the benefit of the content from the conference. And so it's like, rather than watching 3-4 hours of Netflix, maybe just go half of stuff on YouTube you should be watching, listening to, and then half of the other stuff. And so like, if you're doing interviews, you have to always be doing that stuff because you got to stay sharp. You got to stay current. You got to be tuning your strategies. And so that's what, another reason why I like doing it is because it's a forcing function for me to continue to level up.
Well, it's back to that word accountability. It's that self-accountability. I remember I was writing a lot and then I heard something and like, don't be the pretender. Don't be that person that's like out there doing it for all these ulterior motives. And I'm like, wait a second, am I doing that? And I went back and I'm like, actually, most of the stuff that I create is for myself, right? Selfishly, that hopefully other people can take something from it, could be used for the team. So there are those other benefits that come from it. But like, that was like, well, no, that's the reason I want to keep creating content. And I just heard something. It was this little clip. It was Neil deGrasse Tyson. And he was talking about like, people are like, wow, you speak so poetically. And how do you do that? He's like, because I write everything down and I talk about it constantly. I'm appearing on podcasts. And so by the time you've heard me say it, I've said it so many different times, writing it down, journaling, whatever that might be. And it's like, that's such a good way. It's so true. And it's like, if the more you do this, the better you get at it. Like, isn't that worth something, being a better communicator, even just to get your own thoughts across for whatever might come about?
Absolutely. Neil deGrasse Tyson, God, love him. And you know, he's science. Like, what can I learn from him about Uber for lawn mowing? I can learn tons.
Yeah.
Because just the way that dude can like distill complex things down into simple terms is something that we all can learn. And so it's like, there's a lot of benevolent things you do in business that don't necessarily have an immediate ROI. You can't necessarily close the loop on, but that's one of the cool things about it is that it's going to cause you to be a more humble person, a more giving person, because you won't make it unless you have that philosophy. And podcasting interviews is one of those things. Like if you're in year one or two of your business and you want to look at podcasting as a channel and it's like, oh, I think if I put 10 grand into podcasting, I can get 20 out. It's not that type of transaction. If you do it, if you're a host or you come on people's shows for 10 years, I promise you, you'll be glad you did it for 10 years. But I can't sit there and close the loop on the ROI. And a lot of things in business are that way. Culture, for example, doing the right things day in and day out for your culture is kind of like the same way. It's just like thousands of invisible deposits into the culture bank that add up over time. And you can't quantify any one of them.
It's fascinating that you bring that up. And I'm glad you did, because we do podcast production company, and you're out there and we'll have conversations with people and they want to know, if I spend this much money, how much will I get back from it?
Good luck.
You just know that those conversations aren't, and that's okay to think that way, but that's not the type of person that we're trying to connect with, because like you just said, what's your ROI on your culture? How could you possibly measure that? And they've been talking about this for years, like just measuring even advertisements in a magazine. If you go way back, how do you know that that person showed up at your dealership to buy the Mercedes-Benz because they saw page 17 of the Forbes magazine? Maybe they told you, who knows? And there's so many aspects of it. It's like, I don't know which part of it's working, but there's so many other benefits that come from it. But yeah, it's interesting that you brought up someone trying to close the loop on that ROI when it comes to content creation.
Yeah. Or how do you know that just because the shop floor was clean in the dealership and you spend 10 grand a year making sure that shop floor is shiny, how do you know that sold you any more cars? You don't. But there's 100 things you have to do day in, day out that add up, and it's impossible to quantify any one of them. But it's things that you need to be doing. And for me, like, podcasting is one of those things.
Yeah, that's awesome. Green Pal, how do lawn companies learn more about it? How do consumers like myself learn more about it? Where should we go?
Yeah, anybody that, if you need to get your grass cut, don't waste time calling on Craigslist or something silly like that. Just download Green Pal in the App Store or Play Store, or go to greenpal.com. Same if you are in the lawn mowing business or wannabe, just go to yourgreenpal.com, scroll to the bottom, apply as a vendor. And then anybody that wants to get at me, I spend most of my time on Instagram. You can find me at Brian M. Clayton.
I have one last question I want to ask you. I want to get my grass cut this weekend. Do I need to sign contracts? Do I need to do all that? Or can I go find someone to come out this weekend?
Yeah, no, definitely don't need to sign any contracts. You never need to sign any contracts with anybody, whether you use our app or not. Yeah, just download GreenPal. You pop your address in, you'll get 4 or 5 quotes. You pick the person you want to work with, and they'll come on the day you want. And if it went well, you can just book them for the whole season right on the app.
That's awesome. Brian, I'm in. I'm going to do it. I'm going to get on there later today, get it done. I really enjoyed this conversation. We got philosophical. We did all sorts of stuff, but thank you for your time and all your wisdom.
Thanks, Eric. Thanks for having me on.
One of my favorite things about CADSource is the opportunity to chat with amazing business leaders and entrepreneurs. We hope you enjoyed the conversation. If you want to connect, you can find me on LinkedIn or visit us at CADSource.com. Thank you for listening to this CADSource production, Entrepreneur Perspectives, building and protecting your business one podcast at a time. Content Matters with a Z is our content marketing company that helps entrepreneurs tell their own stories to those who care. And here's the thing, we think every entrepreneur that is willing should have their own content platform, and we want to help make that happen, both by working directly with entrepreneurs and by sharing our own stories exploring the craft of content marketing. Content Matters, one piece of content at a time. Learn more at CASContent.com.